Welcome to the Bomb and Gouge podcast. I'm your host, Gary Bissell. This week's guest is emerging hip-hop artist, Packy. Packy's going to talk to us about investing in yourself, taking on risk, what's next for Packy, and what he claims to know about winning big golf tournaments. Man, emerging hip-hop artist, Packy. Packy, welcome to the Bomb and Gouge podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Gary. I'm a new loyal listener after you put me on now.
Well, I really appreciate that. And you have your own podcast, and you know, we'll get into your story here pretty soon because it's a really cool story and pretty inspiring story. But first, since you're on here and this is a golf podcast, let's talk a little golf. You're an avid golfer yourself, and you know a thing or two about winning big tournaments, and I know you pride yourself on this. So let's hear the story, because I know you're dying to tell it, about when you won the state championship your senior year in golf.
Obviously I have this this one up on you. I'm clearly a better golfer because of this. But my senior year of high school, I was the number four golfer on our team. We had a good squad. I was on JV my junior year. And my senior year, I went out and won the state title out of nowhere.
And so that year, what were you averaging per round going into the state finals?
I was shooting low 80s. Which I was happy with. And I mean, I was improving throughout the year. So I think regionals, I probably shot like a 77, 78, something like that. So I was getting better, but yeah, I was around 80 on a good day.
All right. And then tell us the story of the state finals. So how did this happen? Like, how does the four man on a high school golf team who's averaging 80s win the state championship?
I mean, you obviously need some luck. But I don't know, man. I went out. It was really windy the first day. I shot a set one under 71, which was leading the tournament. I was the only player under par. And I know you like this one. I was getting interviewed by the local newspaper afterward. And I don't remember what the question exactly was. Something like, you know, what am I going to do tomorrow? What's my plan for tomorrow or something like that? And I said, I'm just going to go out and try to shoot something in the high 70s. Because that was, if I broke, it was a good round for me. And, but I mean, I don't know, man. I ended up in the state tournament. I shot the two best rounds I'd ever shot, 71 and 75. I went into a playoff. This is at Acres East. And it was really windy. So I know Acres East is kind of it's a pretty straightforward course, but those, especially the 71, was a good score for that weekend. And but I went into a playoff, and we both birdied the first hole, went par-par, and then I won it on the fourth playoff hole with a birdie.
it's a pretty funny, you know, it's a great story. I think I give you, you know, a lot of shit about it, but I'll give you some credit. I mean, being a four man, and you know, there's no doubt you had the ability to step up when it counts most. And the other thing, you also won a state championship in basketball, correct?
Yeah, same year.
Okay, so two state titles in one year from Lansing Catholic Central.
You could definitely say I peaked early.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. So, all right, speaking of Lansing Catholic Central, because this is a cool part of your story. All right. When you grow up in the Lansing area, you know, you're a hip hop artist, not really known. I can't think of any really prevalent hip hop artists from Lansing. Right. And on top of that, you went to a private school. So I'm going to.
That's a private school.
I'm going to say that's a pretty big risk, you know, trying to get into the hip hop game from, you know, being a guy from a private school. You know, Lansing's a city, but it's not a big city. It's not a huge market. It's the capital, but, you know, it's not, as you know, it's not a big market. So I'm going to give, you know, for the listeners a little bit of what it was for you, at least on the outside looking in, you know, for the people around you, and then you can tell your side of it. But it's a great story because I didn't know you super well in high school and even in college. But I remember hearing about, Patrick Duda from Lansing Catholic, you know, he wants to be a rapper or whatever. And me, like, I think everybody else at the time was like, okay, like, have fun with that. I don't know how that's going to work out for you. And I know it wasn't easy in the beginning, right? It was a big risk, and you probably had most people doubting you, if not just about everybody other than yourself and your brother. But it turns out you guys are really good. So for those, you know, listeners, your brother, Matrick, Matt for short, you're Patrick, makes the
– Nice. I see what you did there. You should maybe change career paths.
All right. So he makes the beats for your songs. He actually originally was involved lyrically as well, right? And then dropped out of that and now just makes the beats, which he's extraordinarily talented at. So, you know, and now to give credit to some of your successes, you guys have several songs with a couple million views on your music videos on YouTube, correct? I think I saw Wobbin just hit 4 million, right?
Yeah, on Spotify.
Okay, so, you know, massive success. You've got a blue check on Twitter. That's hard to get.
I'm big time now, dude. You're lucky you even have me on this pod.
I feel pretty honored by it. You have, what, 25,000 followers on Twitter, I think I saw?
Yeah, something around
okay,
there.
Okay, so, you know, this is a big name we got out here. So, you know, and for me, I like all types of music, and hip-hop's one of them. And I endorse you to everybody wholeheartedly. And it's beyond just the fact that you're a friend. Like, I really do enjoy a lot of your songs, and, you know, with the team, I'm playing them in the van all the time, and some of them have become pretty big fans. And, you know, for the listeners, you know, check out Packy on iTunes and YouTube, Spotify, whatever. You know, it's really, really good stuff. So tell us from your perspective, you know, this upcoming, and talk about what it was like in the beginning and how you've grown into what you have and the path that you took.
Well, hey, thank you for the compliments, and I know you do. You are a loyal listener to the music, and I just found that out, you know, only a few years ago. And I think I came to visit you at Grand Valley, and you were talking about how you play it for your guys, and some of them like the music, and so that's when I know someone's actually listening, and they can reference specific songs and things like that. So I appreciate the listens and you putting people on, but. Yeah, the beginning, you hit it right on the head. It was hard being, you know, an 18-year-old, and I was a really good student. I was a good athlete. I was going to Michigan State business school, so it wasn't like I was just this, you know, kid that didn't have any options, and I'm gonna go to try this music thing. So it was weird, and I do have to give much of the credit to my brother, who started before me. He's 2 years older than me, and he was doing the music thing, and I kind of came aboard afterward, and he is super IT technologically inclined, so he did a lot of the annoying background work as far as setting up home studio, being able to even record ourselves. But yeah, we did that, and I guess to spare you all the boring details, because obviously there's lots of trials and tribulations that go along with that, but like you mentioned, taking risks and things. And it's funny, like, I tell people this all the time, like, we have such a high tolerance for just crap in our daily lives, like, as long as it's routine, as long as things don't change. But as soon as someone does something like chase their passions, or we put ourselves out there and we face rejection and judgment, and we don't see the results we wanted right away, we quit. And, you know, something's too hard, it's never going to happen, because you don't see anyone around you doing it. And obviously, like you said, coming from Lansing, Michigan, no one moves to Lansing to pursue music. Like, I'm from here and I happen to pursue it. So you don't see anyone around doing it. You, just like you said, you heard I was doing it, and you thought, okay, well, good luck with that. That's never going to happen. I'm not going to lie and say that those thoughts weren't in the back of my head as I was pursuing it also, but you just gotta keep your head down. It's super cliche, but I think it's a good analogy. People always talk about, you know, Thomas Edison, he invented the light bulb. He had like thousands of failed experiments, but nobody cares about that. because he invented the light bulb. So you have to keep your head down, you have to keep grinding, and you have to know what your result, end result, and your goal is, and can you get there? And we were lucky enough to and put in enough work to see that steady growth. Because, yeah, you are. It's blood, sweat, and tears for 3, 4, 5, 6 years, depending on what your grind is, and you're getting nothing in return. You're not seeing financial gain from it. You're just hopefully seeing certain amount of growth in your business and in your pursuit. And we were lucky enough to be able to see that growth. And that was our motivation as we kept going.
Yeah. So, you know, one part that you spoke to that I love is talking about the failure thing. And so many of us fear failure, and we look at failure as a bad thing, but in reality, you know, the old expression, right? It's only a mistake if you make it twice. And yeah, to fail is okay as long as you're learning from it and keep moving. And you also mentioned, you know, your brother, Moti, who the thing that I love about Moti, and I think this helps you, and you're a little bit like this as well, but he's like so extreme. And I think is a big part of why you guys have been so successful is Moti wears a chip on his shoulder, like just about no one I've ever seen. I mean, he's truly like the saltiest human being on the planet. And it's funny, and he doesn't hide it. Like, he's very vocal about it, and he puts stuff on Twitter, and he's all, you know, commenting. And but that's when you're a long shot, that's what you need, right? I think any long shot in any business, whether it's sports or what have you, they have a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, I agree with you. And in relation to Mo, he is very he's strong willed. If he believes something, that's what's going down. And he's gonna, I joke about it now, but when we're in, you know, he's my brother, so there's good and bad things to that as business partners. But one of the good things is we can really hash it out if we have disagreements. We don't have to concern ourselves with the other person's feelings. We really put ourselves out there, and it is so hard for me to convince him of something that he doesn't already believe. Now, I give him crap for this all the time, because we'll sit there and we'll have a 2-hour argument about something, and he just will not give in, even though I know I'm proving the right points. But then the next day, he won't even come to me and be like, you know what, you're right. He'll just have done what I said and then be like, all right, let's go. So it gets through to him, but he needs to come to the conclusion on his own. He needs to wrap his own head around it in his own way. He's not just going to take your word for it, which is good and bad. But I think with what we do, you get so much rejection and people questioning you and making fun of you and telling you you're doing the wrong things, that I think you have to have a bit of that hard-headedness, and so it's good.
Yeah, another thing that I'll speak to, getting to know you guys and spend some time with you, you know, what really opened my eyes to be successful in anything, and this is so cliche, and everyone knows it, but until you see it, it's hard to believe, is how much work success at a massive level takes. And
yeah,
I think back to it, I'm going to share a story with the listeners here pretty quickly about this trip, but you know, I always look back to when I really saw what your guys' business is like and what it has taken for you guys to get to the level that you're at, was when you guys were living in Scottsdale, Arizona, where I used to live. And I came out and visited and stayed with you and Moti for a week. And I remember just being blown away, sitting in your house, listening to Moti go over this one beat. Like, I mean, it was like a 5-second clip. And he spent like an hour and a half on it and just listening to it over and over and over and doing these slight tweaks. I'm like, dude, how long does it take to make a song if you spend an hour and a half on 5 seconds? You know, but it just shows you, like, you got to be somewhat of a perfectionist.
Yeah. And that goes, there's two sides to that coin, because I would consider both Mo and I perfectionists in the broad sense of the term, because you have to hold yourself to a high standard. But also, more and more lately, I've I've kind of gone away from that word perfectionist because I think so many people misuse it and use it as an excuse to not take the leap and not put themselves out there. And I relate it because I'm in the music world. So that's where I'm coming from when I'm talking about it. I hear so many young artists and up and coming artists talk about, oh, well, this hasn't happened yet because I just can't get it. It's just not perfect. It's not whatever. And then you never end up hearing anything from these guys. And it's like, if I were to go back and listen to the first songs Mo and I ever made, I would cringe. But at the time, it was the best we could do. And we put ourselves out there. And we grew from there. But so many people don't take that first jump. They don't take that leap of faith and put themselves out there because it's scary. But yeah, I do agree with you from a personal level. You do have to be a perfectionist because if you put garbage out, nobody's going to listen to it. You're not going to grow. So, but you do it to the best of your ability and you go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the comment you made where you said it was the best we could do at that time. And yeah, that's something that we're always trying to preach to our players at Grand Valley and anyone that I teach is like, listen, I don't expect you to be a tour player right now. I expect you to strive to be the best that you can be. And if that's a tour player, so be it. But right now, give me the best product that you have. And if every day you're giving me the best product that you have with the idea in mind of improving that product every day, you're going to be successful. It's not about where you are right now. It's where you're trying to get to. And that comes down to daily improvement. And you guys and your record label have certainly done that.
Thank you.
So I do want to tell a quick story because I still think about this and I've told this story to a million people and it goes back to when we were in Arizona. And I'll be curious to see if you remember this. So one night when I was visiting you guys in Scottsdale, and this is when I knew like you guys had really gone nationwide, is we were at Sandbar and we just had, you know, we weren't there super late or anything, but we had dinner and a couple drinks and, you know, we were being very smart and intelligent adults. And even though it wasn't super late and this and that, we decided to take a taxi or an Uber.
Nice.
And I remember when it picked us up, it was just you, me, and Moti. We get in the cab or the Uber or whatever it was, and they're playing one of your songs. Do you remember this?
I vaguely do. I had no idea where you were going with this until you just said the punchline. And yeah, I do have a vague recollection.
So the funniest part of the whole thing was we get in the car and you say, you and me in the back seat, Moti in the front seat. You say to the driver, you're like, yo, this is my song. And he's like, yeah, okay. And so he clearly doesn't believe you. And you start singing along with it, rapping along with it. And he's still not buying it. He's just like, okay, yeah, anyone could know these lyrics or whatever, you know, and be able to rap. And you're like, don't you think it's weird that I sound just like him, though? And he's like, Well, that could be coincidence. And so I think you finally just gave up. And we're like, whatever, I'm not going to try and convince this dude. And I'll never forget this line. It was like the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. He dropped us off at your house. And as we got out, he said, have a good night, guys. I'm going to go pick up Eminem now.
Dang. I honestly don't remember that. But that's funny.
My gosh. I tell that story all the time. It was like the hardest I've ever laughed. It's because like this dude to this day still doesn't know that he had you in his car. And he's a fan of your music.
That's funny. Yeah, there are. It's still cool, like, because I'm obviously not nearly to the point of popularity where I walk down the street and people are like, oh, Packy, or anyone, especially outside of my hometown. So when we lived in Scottsdale in Phoenix, I remember the first we had just moved there and we went to actually go check out Top Golf for the first time ever. And it was the middle of the day because, you know, we don't have real jobs at the time. And it's like middle of the week, middle of the day. There's no one there. There's just the employees. And we go play some Top Golf. And we're at the way far end of the place by ourselves. And some employee comes walking all the way down. And he's like, are you Packy? Are you guys the Spectators? And I was like, yeah. And this is one of the first times, if I think it might have been the first time that I ever got recognized or someone knew who I was outside of my home state, hometown. So those things are still really cool. So that's a funny story.
Yeah. And so, and you guys have done nationwide shows, and, you know, it's been really cool to see you grow your business. And the way you've done that is you've got an expression that I love, and I want to talk about it, and you give your two cents on this, is you always talk about investing in yourself. So for the listeners, tell us what that means to you and how you apply that to your life and your business.
So one of the most common questions I get from up and coming artists is, you know, if you had one piece of advice, what would you give to an up and coming artist? And I do, I go with invest in yourself. And yeah, it directly relates to the music. But obviously you can relate it to other things. And I do actually mean invest in yourself monetarily. And yeah, you can do it other ways, like time, and you can relate it to other things, but I literally mean invest money in yourself, because so many young artists, and I go back to when I talked about it was the best we could do at the time. Yeah, we didn't have the best equipment. We didn't have the experience, but what we had, we did the best with. Then, as we went on, we didn't just go back and keep recording and doing the same exact thing. We saved money. We weren't making any money on our music. We saved money from our part-time jobs that we had while we were going to school, and we invested in more equipment and better things and better technology to make our music sound better, because, you know, recording on a USB microphone on your laptop isn't going to get you the best quality. So we made upgrades. And I think, you know, you can even relate it to, like, think about it with golf. I play a bunch of golf. I play golf every summer. I'm a decent golfer. I shoot, you know, high 70s, low 80s. I'm a decent golfer. But every year I go out and I'm the same level. I get no better, no worse, but I play a lot. But I'm not out hitting the range every day. I'm not paying for lessons. I'm not doing those type of things. And so many people, so many young artists can go in and say, okay, I'm going and I just made this song and I put it out and it didn't gain any traction. And then I did it again. And then I did it again. And that's it. And nothing's happening, period. Well, what are you doing to get better? You got, and that's where I think that's where things really separate, is when people invest in themselves, because it shows that you're putting your money where your mouth is. I think 90%, especially if you're talking about males, I think 90% of people would be cool being a music artist or a professional athlete, right? But that investment can really separate the people that are serious about it, because how many people actually put their money where their mouth is and invest in lessons and equipment and things that are going to get you better. So once you take that step, other people are even more willing to help you along the way, because they see that you're serious about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you talk about investing in yourself and doing the things that's necessary to get better, you know, one thing we talk about Grand Valley a lot with our team is goals are great. But to me, the way you break it down is a goal is just a destination. And Coach K Duke has always talked about that. You know, all a goal is a destination. To me, the only thing a goal does for you is provide the motivation. So I decide, okay, this is my goal. Maybe I write it down. Maybe I put it up in my room, whatever. And when I wake up in the morning, that's what motivates me. Like, hey, remember, this is what you get up and work for. But just having the goal doesn't get you there. It's that process. Right. And day in and day out of daily improvement, you know, my kind of slogan has become Kaizen, right, which is a Japanese business term for daily improvement. And that's what I've always prided myself on and tried to instill in our program is, hey, every day we're just trying to get a little better. And like you said, that takes investing in yourself. And I think that's a really important piece that a lot of us miss is you're going to have to give back and do a lot of things that aren't sexy, and you know, they don't seem like a lot of fun at the time, but that's how you ultimately get to that destination you're trying to get to. And I can relate wholeheartedly. You know, I've spent money to go, you know, I'm a golf instructor, and I've spent money to go watch other instructors teach. And that's helped my career a lot. And I think one of the biggest things, you know, a part of investing in yourself as well, is understanding that you never know too much and you always need to continue to get better. And I've looked at, there was a survey that I saw with golf instruction where they asked the top 100 golf instructors in the country how much they thought they knew, just percentage-wise. Like, obviously, it was a weird question, but, you know, how much do you know relative to what you think you need to know to be the best you can be? And they asked that to the top 100 golf instructors, and then they went around and they just asked local guys. Like, just local guys, you know, no-namers who are teaching lessons here and there and haven't really got on the map yet. And I remember the top 100 golf instructors responded somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, all of them were, like, less than 50%. You know, like, I know 40% of what I need to know. Whereas these local guys who haven't accomplished nearly as much said they knew, like, 80 or 90% of what they needed to know. And I just think it's that idea of, like, the best are always growing and always trying to learn, and they never get that know-it-all mentality of, like, hey, I know what's best, and it, like, man, you should always be trying to grow, and I don't care if you're the best in the world. Like, there's always room to grow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's funny how that works, right? And part of it, I think, is you do, as you get along, you get exposed to how much is actually out there, too. Like, I know when I first started doing music, if I just had the quick thought of getting to the level that I'm at right now, I would have been like, wow, that's awesome. How the hell did I do that? I'm there. That's cool. Now I have more hunger than I did then to take it to the next level, because I know there's so much more out there than where I'm at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, that's what a competitor does, right? And at the end of the day, you know, I talk about that chip on your guys' shoulder, and that's really, to me, what you and Moti are. And you talk, you know, your success isn't just, you're a person who's been successful in just about everything you've done, and it's because of the mentality you have. You know, you were a good athlete in high school, good student. You know, you've got a degree from Michigan State. And so, but I think a lot of that speaks to your mentality. It's just being a competitor at the end of the day. You know, I define success. Like, everyone defines success in a different way. I define success as trying to be the best you can be at whatever you do. You know, I don't care what that is, but to me, that's just being a competitor, right? Like, you've got to want to be the absolute best at whatever you do. And you know, only one person can achieve that. But to me, if you lived your life and chose to really go after, and at the end of the day, you can say, I did everything I could do to be the best at what I did. To me, that is success.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And to even take it a step further, not to turn this into some motivational speaking talk, but there's something I just heard recently, and maybe other people have heard it. I think it was Will Smith, and I don't know if he got it somewhere else, but he talked about fault versus responsibility. And so many people get those, think they're one and the same. Like, for example, you know, too many people just think that things happen to them and you're just at the mercy of the universe. And we love the victim mentality and pointing the finger at others, because it's just easier to write it off that way. But for example, if you got cheated on in a relationship and your relationship's ruined and blah, 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 it's the other person's fault, right? But it's like, it affects your life going forward. It's their fault that that's affected, but it's 100% your responsibility to overcome that and, like, build a happy life going forward. You can't get stuck in it and just always point at that as the reason your life is the way it is. That's on you, not them. That's your responsibility. It's their fault. It's your responsibility. And that's why I like your motto and your daily improvement thing, is so many people want to point to things that go wrong or reasons they couldn't do this, or they always need to look at the big picture. Whereas you look at so many people that have accomplished things in the big picture, they've had so many things go wrong, whether they were their fault or somebody else's, but they wake up and they do something toward their goal every day. And then they look back and they say, wow, look at what I've done for the big picture. It's never it's rarely, I should say, an overnight thing. And I think that's what people know it, but they either don't actually get it, or they're really not, at the end of the day, willing to put the work in daily that takes.
Yeah. And what you're speaking to a little bit is, there was a book I read in college that changed my viewpoint on things. And it's a book called Mindset by Carol S. Dweck. And I recommend everyone reads it. And it's the entire book is premised on the idea of fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. And if someone with a fixed mindset is someone who just believes, you know, I'm either talented or I'm not, and I'm either going to succeed or I'm not. And that's based on too many factors that are out of my control. Whereas someone with a growth mindset says, you know what, it's not about my failures, and I know I'm going to fail. My goal is to continually improve upon my failures and know that it's as simple as it sounds, a growth mindset, that I can grow every day and become better every day.
Yeah.
So, all right, we're going to transition back into my quick fire portion, which is short, and I just want to fire off some questions at you, and you're going to give me the first answer that comes to your mind.
All right, let's do it.
First, what is your favorite golf course you've ever played?
Probably Bay Harbor.
Do you have, now there's three nines at Bay Harbor. Do you have a specific nine you like the best?
I think I like the links the best. The quarry is like really cool looking. It's a beautiful course. It's also, I think, probably the toughest of the three.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the links is the best of the three. So, okay, cool. So that's your favorite course that you've ever played in the entire United States, not just Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't played a ton of super nice courses. That's by far the nicest course I've played. You know, I just play a lot of local courses, and when I lived out west, I played a lot of, you know, local courses around there. I'm not out here getting on the nicest courses. I know I can't remember what podcast it was. You were talking to somebody about favorite courses, and you guys are listing Crystal Downs, and you know, you're talking about Pebble Beach and all this stuff, and I've never touched anything like that.
someday, keep growing your business, right, and you'll be able to get wherever you want.
You keep growing your business, and I'll keep being your friend.
Fair enough. All right. Who's better, you or Mo T at golf?
Definitely me. I know this is quick fire, but I do got to give Mo his props because I think he's seen the biggest jump and improvement in his game this year. We were both always really close, like low 80s consistently. If we broke 80, it was a good day type thing. But I would beat him way more consistently. Now this year it's way closer to 50-50, but I'll take every year we take a trip up north and play a bunch of golf. That's where we play Bay Harbor and that stuff. And I beat him more than he beat me. So I think it was like 4-1 or something like that. So I'm taking the crown still.
All right. Do you have a favorite club in your bag? Like a club that you like to hit the most? Like when you pull this club, you feel the most confident with it?
You know, I don't really, and I know that's rare. Like so many people, and I think it was maybe last year, I convinced myself that, look, every club is just a different loft. Like, stop. Don't trip about, oh, but this is, your five iron is so much harder to hit than your six, because I think that's an area where a lot of people do, like either five, six, or seven in there somewhere. They just can't jump up to that lower degree because it's so hard to hit. I did, though. I just got a hybrid for the first time, a three hybrid, and I do like that a lot. So that might be becoming my favorite club. It is a lot easier to hit than what my three iron was. So maybe my hybrid, but I got to give it time to see.
All right, that's a sign of aging, just so you know.
I know. So I'm kind of pissed about that, but I held out long enough, and then I am glad I got it now.
All right. Do you have a favorite player on the PGA Tour, someone you really root for?
I'd like to see Ricky get one. I know Ricky's a popular answer for our generation, I guess. But I think golf's in a really good place right now. Obviously having Tiger back to go along with all the young talent is sweet. But I like pretty much all the young American talent out there. Koepka's awesome. And I do like how golf is becoming more of an athletic game. It isn't just, you know, you got these fat slobs out there swinging the club, all these John Daly's. You got Dustin Johnson, you got Brooks Koepka, and I think golf is attracting more athletes these days, which I think is cool.
Yeah, no question. So, okay, last question here in quickfire. Most influential person in your life that's not in your family?
That's tough. most influential.
Maybe a mentor to you, anything like that.
Um, You know, I don't know if I'd go with influential, but motivational. I always like to give a little plug and credit to, and he was on your podcast, but my friend Dan Wiseman, his story, and I was able to get to become a close friend of his over the last 6, 7, 8 years, and his story. So I won't repeat it all because it's on your podcast, but he's a cancer survivor and one of my good friends. And sometimes without even talking to him about it, I just sit back and think about all the things he's gone through and the things he deals with on a day-to-day basis, and him loving athletics and sports and things like that, and always having that disadvantage but not complaining about it and not doing anything about it. It's definitely a daily motivational reminder for me. So maybe not necessarily like inspiration if I try to relate it to like my business and my music and things like that, but definitely a daily motivation.
Yeah, no doubt. Dan's he's great in that way. And you know, I would say you and him are similar in terms of you're both very passionate people, you know, bring a great energy to any conversation and every day. And you know, Dan was tough. Obviously I grew up with Dan and went to school with him the whole way through. We graduated together. And he was a pain in my ass just from the standpoint of like, I wasn't allowed to complain about anything growing up if I was wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Because if I complained about something, well, I've had 27 surgeries and a 50% chance to live through my cancer. And I'm like, damn. Like,
oh yeah. No, he likes to tell it. He's annoying. Like I'm not acting like he's not annoying for sure. If I complain about anything, oh, my leg hurts too.
Yep. But it keeps it in perspective, no doubt. And, yeah, he's great in that way. Okay, so we'll get wrapping up here, but the last thing, you know, I want to ask you and for our listeners and for me too is not only are you a hip-hop artist, but you actually have your own record label, the Spectators Collective.
Yep.
So why don't you tell us what's next for Packy and Moti and the Spectators? You know, where are you guys trying to head with this? And you have a couple other artists signed now, so tell us just you know briefly about them and where you guys are headed as a business.
Yeah, I mean the label is definitely the big picture thing. I'm not stopping making music anytime soon. I'm always working on new music and content. Mo and I have our weekly podcast. I've got some shows coming up here. But the label, the Spectators Collective, is the big picture. We got a new artist that I'm excited about, and we'll be rolling him out probably within the next few weeks here. We have younger talent now on the label that we want to develop and help distribute their music. And so the goal is, you know, when I'm 40, I'm not going to be a rapper anymore. I'm not going to be Jay-Z. I will hopefully be helping these young guys, and we will have hopefully built something even bigger than we have now, where it's kind of just a machine where you plug these artists in and they automatically get this boost to their career, bigger than what they get at the moment. And Mo and I are there to give hands-on advice and help along the way. So that's the goal with the label. I've been pleasantly surprised and happy with where it's gotten to this point. It was actually in Phoenix when Mo and I decided to start the label. We just were randomly standing around that ping pong table, and the only thing in our main room there was that ping pong table. And Mo brought it up, and we ended up literally standing on opposite sides of the ping pong table for about 6 hours that afternoon, just talking about it. And that was the first time it was brought up. And later that night, we pulled the trigger on it. So we didn't know what to expect, but it's been awesome.
Yeah, no, it's been, you know, as a friend of yours and as a fan of your music, it's been awesome to watch and see you guys grow. And, you know, from seeing it from the beginning, see the quality of your music constantly improve. And, you know, actually, I'm going to give you one more random quickfire question because I'm curious about this. What's your favorite song you've ever made?
God, I hate that question. Because it's when you make a song, like you're tied to different songs for different reasons. And there's a reason you made every song. It's not like you just, you know, turned around and made that one for the hell of it. The Parlay, I will say, is the project I'm tied to the most. So I'll give you a project maybe instead of a song, because that was, we had moved away from home for the first time. We both had just graduated college and both could have gotten solid jobs, but we decided to go move to LA and pursue the music thing. I had just broken up with my girlfriend at the time. We moved away, and it was the first time I felt like I could speak on topics like relationships with friends and family and things that were going on, because I didn't have to see him every day. So I was across the country and I could really tap into my thoughts and feelings. And so that project was the first time I think I took that leap. And I've kind of stayed on that ever since. But that being the first time I did it and all those kind of life-changing moments, that project is the most near and dear to my heart, I think.
All right, great answer. So, Packy, thanks for coming on today. I just want to remind listeners, make sure you check out Packy and his music. It's great stuff. You know, when you think hip-hop, I think it give you a certain image, but I think his music speaks to everybody, and, you know, I wholeheartedly endorse it and listen to it on a regular basis. So go check him out on iTunes or Spotify, and check out his podcast as well, the Spectators podcast. Those are really good as well if you like music and sports. So thanks again, Packy, and I look forward to seeing you soon, all right?
No problem. Thanks for having me, Gary.
Take care.